So this is meant to be a summary of what I'm going to say for the Shabbos HaGadol Drasha. I want to start with a marvelous lecture, tirade, I'm not sure exactly what to call it, that Moshe delivered when Samael came to take his neshama at the end of his life. Medrash in Devarim Rabbah, Perek Yud Aleph. Ein lecha rasha b'chol hastanim kulan kisamael. There is no one as wicked as Samael among all of the Satanim, Satans. Good discussion, what exactly that means. There's more than one Satan. And there is no one more righteous than Moshe among the Nevi'im. And Samuel the wicked anticipated, looked forward to taking Moshe's neshama. And he was finally commissioned to do so. And I'm going to read out my English translation of this medrash. Immediately he, Samael, clothed himself in anger and girded himself with his sword and cloaked himself in cruelty, and he went to greet Moshe. When he saw him sitting and writing the Shem HaMeforash, the explicit name, and the radiance of his appearance was like the sun, and he resembled a malach of Hashem, Samael feared Moshe, and he could not find an opening to address Moshe until Moshe said to Samael, quoting the end of Yeshayahu chapter 48, "There is no peace, Hashem says to the wicked. I'm not greeting you. What are you doing here?" He replied, "I have come to take your neshama." He replied, "Who sent you?" He responded, "The creator of all creatures." And Moshe says, "You can't take my neshama." He responded, "The neshamas of all who enter this world are given into my hand. What do you mean?" He replied, "I have greater strength than any who have entered this world." Doesn't sound like Moshe to me, nonetheless. Satan replied, "What is your strength?" And Moshe says, "I am the son of Amram. I left my mother's womb circumcised, and I did not need circumcision. And on the day I was born, I had the ability to speak, and I walked on my feet, and I spoke with my father and mother, and I did not even nurse milk. And when I was 3 months old, I prophesied, saying that I would receive the Torah from fiery flames. And when I walked outside, I entered the royal palace, and I took the crown from the king's head. And when I was 80 years old, I performed signs and wonders in Egypt, and I took 600,000 out before the eyes of all Egypt, and I split the sea into 12 parts, and I turned bitter water into sweet. And I ascended and walked a path in the heavens, and I took part in battle with the Malachim. And I received the fiery Torah, and I dwelled beneath the throne of fire, and my shelter was beneath a pillar of fire. And I spoke with Hashem face to face, and I defeated the heavenly forces, and I revealed their secrets to humanity. And I received Torah from Hashem's right hand, and I taught it to Israel. And I waged war against Sihon and Og, two idolatrous warriors who, during the flood, the water did not reach their ankles due to their height. And I made the sun and moon stop in the heights of the world, and I struck them, Sihon and Og, with the staff in my hand and killed them. Who among all who have entered this world could do this? Leave here, wicked one. You cannot say that. Flee from before me. I will not give you my neshama." Moshe's lecture to Samuel, when Samuel wants to take his neshama. It's a powerful speech with a lot to talk about. But there's one specific point I want to highlight, as it teaches us a major message about the meaning of Pesach and about our roles as Jews and about celebrating Pesach during a hostage crisis and during a war. I'll start with a question. The question goes back to the original title that I gave this drasha. Moshe isn't in the Haggadah, but we are. Why is Moshe actively excluded from the Haggadah? We know Moshe is not in the Haggadah, other than the cameo, Vayaminu b'Hashem uv'Moshe avdo. The Jews believed in Hashem, and they believed in Moshe, his servant. But other than that, he's not there. And a medrash in Shir HaShirim Rabbah seems to indicate that it's actually intentional. I thank my friend Rabbi Ezra Goldschmidt for pointing out this medrash. The pasuk in Shir HaShirim says, "Amishkavi balelos bikashti esha ahava nafshi bikashtiv velo mitzasiv." Al mishkavi balelos, on my bed at night, zel laila shel Mitzrayim. That refers to the night of Egypt. Bikashtiv, I sought him, esha ahava nafshi, the one I loved, ze Moshe. That's Moshe. Bikashtiv velo mitzasiv, I sought him, I did not find him. Apparently alluding to Moshe's absence in this story on that fateful night. Moshe is omitted. In fact, the Haggadah actually explicitly excludes him, I should say. Ve'avarti be'eretz Mitzrayim, Hashem says. I passed through the land of Egypt, says the Haggadah, ani ve'lo ha-shaliach. I went, and not any agent of mine. It's an explicit exclusion. Indeed, Chazal wondered about this business of saying, not Moshe. What do you mean, not Moshe? Didn't he do an awful lot? And they give different explanations. So the Avudram says that Moshe was the Jews' agent to Paro, not Hashem's agent to carry out the miracles. The Tosfos Rid gives me a separate answer. The extent of Moshe's job was to speak to Paro. He didn't carry out Yetzias Mitzrayim. He didn't take the Jews out. Similarly, the Shibale Aleket says that this line here, this Ani V'lo HaShaliach, is specific to Makas Bechoros, which Moshe, in fact, did not carry out. Rav Soloveitchik has a unique approach. Rav Soloveitchik said, normally, when you're dealing with Shlichut, with somebody being a person's agent, so the Meshaleach sends the Shaliach. The person who is sending sends the agent who goes and does the job. But here, Hashem went along with Moshe, as seen when Hashem says to Moshe, Bo el Paro versus Lech, right? Hashem says, come to Paro, and Rashi notes, come to me, I am going to be there for you. So therefore, Moshe isn't going it alone. Moshe is actually going with Hashem. I want to offer another answer for why Moshe is excluded. But for now, let's hold that as question one. Why is Moshe not credited for his role in Yetzias Mitzrayim in our Haggadah? Okay, why is it that in our Haggadah, Moshe is not credited? Next part. There are Jews in the Haggadah who get credit, just not Moshe. The Jews are first presented in the Haggadah as a rapidly multiplying nation due to Hashem's bracha, and then a nation that suffers at the hand of the Mitzrim, at the hands of the Egyptians. We are acted upon. But then we are suddenly presented as actors. Look at the seven stages of the Maggid. If you take a look at source number 4, I broke them out. The Maggid begins introducing the concept of telling the story and we ask introductory questions. Then, after that, we are maschil begnus. We talk about our original disgrace. I talked about this at Haggadah night last week. Mitchila ovdei avodah zarah hayu avoseinu. Initially, our ancestors were idolatrous. And vihishamda, and lavan, and arami oved avi, and our descent. So we say vihisha amda, lavan, arami oved avi, and then our descent to Egypt. We go down to Egypt and we become slaves. Third part, Vayareyu Osanu Amitrim, the Mitzrim harm us, we begin to suffer. Then you get to the middle, the fourth part. Vanitzak El Hashem, we cried out to Hashem, Vayishma Kolenu, and he heard our voice. This is reporting what is found in Shmos, chapter 2, sentences 23 to 25. If you take a look at source number 5 on the sheet, I only brought the English, not the Hebrew, to avoid Shemos issues. But the Torah says it was after many days the king of Egypt died. Vayomas melech Mitzrayim ve'onchu b'nei Yisrael min ha'avodah. The children of Israel groaned from the labor. Vayizaku, they cried out. Vatal shavasam el ha'elokim min ha'avodah. Their wail rose to Hashem from the labor. And Hashem heard their cry. Hashem remembered his bris with Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Hashem saw the children of Israel. Vayeda elokim. And Hashem knew. So that we follow that up in the Maggid by saying Hashem hears our cry, he registers our suffering. Then part 6, Makos, miracles. And then we bring the Korban Pesach and we thank Hashem for our redemption. Those are the 7 stages found in Maggid. The fulcrum, what makes the change, is that middle part of Vanitzak El Hashem Elokei Avoseinu. It's when we cried out to Hashem. Then we get Hashem hears our cry. Then we get miracles. Then we get the Korban Pesach. All starts with when we cry out to Hashem. Now, as it's told there in Shmos, right, it says that Paro died and we cried out and Hashem listened. Why did Hashem only listen at that point? So Rashi, quoting the Medrash, says that something uniquely bad happened. And maybe we didn't even cry before. Rashi, in source number 6, says, Vayomas Melech Mitzrayim, the king of Egypt, died. Nitzara, he became leprous. Vayashochet Tinokos Yisrael Varochet Bedamam. He shafted the Jewish children and he bathed in their blood. Absolutely horrific. We didn't cry before. Now we're crying. Or, alternatively, maybe what Rashi is trying to say is, now it's so bad that Hashem is going to listen. But I think the implication of the Medrash Rashi is quoting is really that now was when we cried out. Ramban similarly says also, now we cried out, we didn't cry beforehand. He says, Mina kohane avadim lemelech Belial Rasha, the practice of all who are forced to work for an horrible, worthless king, is sheyu mitzapim u'mechakim liyomoso, that they anticipate his death. That's what they're waiting for. Because Rosh Hameis HaMelech, when they saw the king had died, he anchu ma'od mimaloch adam chanef, then they groaned from the coronation of a cruel man. The fact that there's another cruel person who is going to be in charge. That's the way, that's where Ramban reads it. We gave up hope now because of the new king. So, I find it difficult. Both Rashi and Ramban seem to be saying we really didn't cry out beforehand. That's hard. We didn't cry out at all. So I'd like to suggest another avenue, which fits with some of what's been said here. We cried out before, but our cries now became qualitatively better because Paro died, and now we thought something could change, and that made our cry stronger. That made our cry better. You know, Ramban emphasizes in his comments on the Sefer HaMitzvos that the point of tefillah and the mitzvah of tefillah is about emunah. It's about believing that Hashem answers. If you take a look at source number 8, when the Rambam tells thee that the Rambam has one view of what the mitzvah of davening is. He believes it's a daily mitzvah of tefillah. Ramban disagrees. And the Ramban says, here's what could be the biblical mitzvah of prayer. Vim ula yiyah midrashim betfila ikur min hatorah. And if the exegesis of prayer has a biblical basis, nimna oso biminyano shel harav, we will count it in the Rambam's count of mitzvos. The nomar shehi mitzvah la'eis hatzaros will say that it is a mitzvah in a time of trouble. Shenamin shehu yisbarach v'yis'ala shomea tefillah, to believe that Hashem hears prayer. V'hu ha'matzil min hatzaros b'tefila uza'aka, and he saves from trouble through prayer and through crying out. That's what Ramban says is the mitzvah. The mitzvah is believing that Hashem answers. That's the idea. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein spells it out in The Duties of the Heart and the Response to Suffering in source number 9. It is noteworthy that the Ramban speaks of a duty to believe that tefillah is efficacious rather than a duty to pray. It's not about having a duty to pray. It's the duty to believe that prayer is effective. Our new belief when Paro died, that therefore there's an opportunity, that Hashem is now going to answer, that things are going to change, that made it more effective and led to the next stage, Vayishma Hashem es Kolenu. It is the fact that we cry out with the belief that things can change. That's why we're there. Now let's go back to question number 1. Why are the Jews with their tefillah highlighted and not Moshe? Why is it that only the Jews with their prayer are going to get highlighted in the Haggadah? They're the source of change. So I would suggest that Moshe never truly suffered in Egypt. He became frustrated at the start of his mission, true. The Jews grew angry at him early on, true. But he has miracles in his back pocket, right? Your hand is suddenly this color, now it's that color, sticks into snakes, and all these wonders that he's able to bring out of the desert into Egypt. Hashem takes care of Moshe the entire way. The Haggadah is not Moshe's story. The Haggadah takes us from Maschil Begnus to Messiah B'Shevach. It takes us from a state of degradation to a stage of greatness and glory. But that Shevach, that glory, only comes at the end with Geula, with redemption, with Hallel. The core of the story is how we get from Genus to Shevach, how we go from our degradation to get to the glory. And that's the story of the Jews who suffered and didn't have the ability to call in an airstrike at will, and yet they davened, and yet they believed. That's the great story of the Haggadah. It's not a story of somebody who has miracles at his disposal. These are the Jews who make it into the Haggadah, the ones who suffer and yet remain loyal to Hashem, believing that Hashem can help them. It's the dauntless persistence of our formidable ancestors who were slaves in Egypt and who did not give up, but instead retained their identity as descendants of Abraham and Sarah. The Midrashim talk about how they did not change their identity. They did not change their names. They did not change their language. Right? We talked about that in the Halal Dvar Torah about Beis Yaakov Me'am Lo'ez. They view the Egyptians as having a foreign tongue. They didn't change their dress. I brought you one of the Midrashim in source number 10. U'minayin shloshinu es l'shonam. How do we know the Jews did not change their tongue? Shenemar, because the Pasuk says, Ki fi hamedaber aleichem. When Yosef encounters the brothers in Egypt, and he tells them who he is, he says, you see, it is my mouth speaking to you, meaning I'm speaking our language. Vayomru Elokeho Evrim Nikra Aleinu. And they said, this is now talking about Moshe and Aaron talking to Paro, the God of the Hebrews called out to us, the Hebrews, we are Hebrews. Vayomer, and another pasuk, Vayavah, Palit Vayaged L'Avram HaEvri, that when Og, or whoever this refugee was, but we understand it to be Og, the refugee from the flood. When he came and told Avram that Lot was taken captive, Avram is the Hebrew. That shows that when we say the Ivri, we are identifying as the descendant of Avraham. We retained our identity in Egypt. And we read about the son of the Jewish woman and the Egyptian man, Ben Ish Mitzri, and the Midrashim comment that he was the only one, the only case in which that happened. It's the energy of the Nashim Tzidkaniyo, superlatively righteous women who kept their families going despite Egyptian slavery and in whose merit we are rescued from Egypt. Take a look at source number 11, the Gemara in Sota. Bischar Nashim Tzidkaniyo Shahayu Ba'osu Ador Nigalu Yisrael Mi Mitzrayim. In the merit of the righteous women of that generation, the Jews were rescued from Egypt, and the Gemara goes on to tell us the whole story of all the things, or some of the things that they did. I didn't bring all the things on the page here. It's the fearlessness of brave ancestors who, in the midst of idolatrous Egypt, slaughtered the representative of the Egyptian lamb god for the Karban Pesach. These are the Jews who usher in the Shevach, the glory. These are the Jews who make it into the Haggadah. And that is the first part of what I meant when I said that we are in the Haggadah. We are those Jews who have dealt with so much for the past 7 months. No, not like Egyptian slavery, and not even like Jews who live in Israel. But nonetheless, we have dealt with so much, and we are here, and we are ma'aminim, we believe. We are in the Haggadah. And here's another way we are in the Haggadah, the mitzvah of matzah. The emphasis on the human being who suffers and yet remains committed is found in matzah on two levels. First of all, because we have a halachic bias towards hand matzah as our handiwork, no pun intended. For centuries, people made their own matzah, as described in the Gemara. Over time, this evolved into a communal baking process in which needy people were hired to do the work under the supervision of the community's rabbi. The earliest machines in the 19th century were mechanical rollers to flatten the dough, and then it would fall into a tray, which would enter the oven. And it was approved by local rabbis, and then in the 1840s, Rav Hamburg of the yeshiva in Firth appealed to Rav Yosef Shaul Nathanson, and he approved it, the Pharisee Yisrael approved it, and it spread in the 1850s to New York City, in the 1880s to Cincinnati, with the approval of Ber Manashevitz, a shochet from Europe who branched out into matzah. And we know why it appealed, why machine matzah was appealing. Right? It was cheaper. You didn't need to hire labor. Also, there was difficulty finding good workers to make good hand matzah. The Ksav Sofer resisted machine matzah for years because he hadn't seen it and he was reluctant to embrace something new. But he was forced to tackle it because he couldn't get good, pious workers. So in 1858, he went to check it out. Machine matzah had a particular hold in the U.S. Great essay by Jonathan Sarna, How Matzah Became Square. Part of the appeal, he says, was that the new machine matzah was advertised as pure and high-tech. But there was strenuous halachic opposition for various reasons. First of all, there were halachic problems, concerns about will it become chametz during the processing, maybe there's dough that gets stuck in it, concern that maybe there are some good machines and some bad machines, and how are you going to deal with communities that get bad machines and think that they're fine? What happens if we approve machines and the machines don't do a good job, and then we want to hire people to do it by hand and we're not able to find people because we don't have the volume to produce anymore? What about the concern that it doesn't qualify for Seder use as matzas mitzvah for reasons I'm going to come back to? The machine doesn't have proper kavana. We'll talk about that. There were minhag issues. The minhag is round matzah. Machines make square matzah. There were meta halachic problems. You know, this is something brand new. It's some kind of an enlightenment thing. Or alternatively, an economic concern, support for the needy people who had worked on matzah production. But one key reason why there was resistance to machine matzah was because of the argument that we should be doing this ourselves. We should be making the matzah ourselves to be like the Jews who left Egypt. Matzah is described in the Torah as lechem oni. We always translate that as bread of affliction. There is the medrash, bread on which we answer many questions or we say many things. And that's all true. But the Gemara in Psachim, Kuf Tezayin Abad Aleph, source number 12, says, Ma darko shel oni hu masik v'ishto ofa? What is it that a pauper does? He lights the fire, his wife bakes. Af kanami hu masik v'ishto ofa? That's what we do when making matzah. The man lights the fire, the woman bakes the matzah. So there's an aspect of lechem oni, and therefore we are supposed to be doing it ourselves. There's also an issue of love of the mitzvah. The Rokeach says that it's about love of the mitzvah, and he quotes a mechilta, which I brought you in source number 13. We're told that when the Jews leave Egypt, they carry the matzah, tsuros besimlo sam al shichmam, bound up in their clothing on their shoulders, says the Medrash. What? They didn't have anything to carry it? They didn't have a means of carrying it? They loved the mitzvah, and therefore they went to do it themselves. They didn't want to outsource the mitzvah. And so is brought in the Turin or Chaim Tavav, Tav Samach, excuse me, from the Rush in source number 14. The Rush writes, Ubale Maisa v'chasidim, people of great deeds, pious people, v'atmimim, people without flaw, machmirin al atzman ke ga'onim, ha-machmirin. They are strict like the view of the ga'onim who are strict. Veloshin va'ofen ba'atzman. They knead it themselves. They bake it themselves. Kehahide amrinan madarko shel ani hu masik v'ishto ofa. Like we say, what is the way of the pauper? He lights the fire, and his wife does the baking. It's about love of the mitzvah. That's what we're trying to do. And so the Tur writes. The Tur is the son of the Rush. In source number 15, V'chein hayanohe gadoni avi harash zal. That's what my father the Rosh did. Hayamishtadabahem. He would work with them. V'omed al asiyasan. He would stand over them as they were doing it. Umizareis ha'oskinbah. And he would energize them as they were involved in it. V'yamisayeya b'arichasan. And he aided as they arranged the dough. So there is here an emphasis on do it ourselves. We should be the ones to do it ourselves. We are the ones who are suffering, and we are the ones who are invested in this great mitzvah, displaying our emunah. That's part one of the matzah focus. And again, I'm using this to illustrate that we are in the Haggadah. We do have a role. We have this active role right here. Second, the mitzvah of shmirah, of guarding the matzah, says the Gemara in Psachim in source number 16. The Mishnah says, Chalos hatoda rikike nazir. If somebody makes matzah to use with a karban, such as with lachme toda, you bring a thanks offering, so you're supposed to bring 40 loaves of bread. Some of those are matzah. If you made matzah for that purpose, or a nazir is supposed to bring certain offerings, and one of the offerings is rikikin, which are matzah, you made the matzah for that purpose, asan la'atzmo, or if somebody makes it for him, if somebody made those for himself, ein yotze bohen, he's not fulfilling the mitzvah of matzah with that on Pesach. It won't work. Asal limkor b'shuk, but if you made it to sell in the market and then people might be using it for Pesach, yotzin bohen, you fulfill your obligation for it on Pesach. So you can't use it for Pesach if you intended it to be for a karban. Only if it was for open use so that people could be using it for Pesach. Menoani mili, the Gemara asks, how do you know that? Omar Rabba de Omar Kra Ushmar Temes Hamatzos. Rabba said, because the Torah says, you shall guard the matzos. Matzah hamishtameres l'shem matzah. Matzah which is guarded as matzah. Yotzazu she'ein mishtameres l'shem matzah el l'shum zevach. As opposed to this, which is not guarded for matzah, but instead it was guarded for a karban. It was guarded to bring as a karban. In other words, the Seder matzah has to be guarded with the mitzvah in mind. It's not only about keeping the grain from becoming chametz. It's not only that I'm guarding it so that it doesn't become chametz. It is so that it is guarded with the mitzvah in mind. Sefer Isser V'Heter L'Rashi brings Rashi's practice, and it says you have to guard it l'shem mitzvah, for the sake of the mitzvah, from the time that the grain is ground up and onward. Same thing in the Rambam, in Mishneh Torah, Hechas Chametz U'Matzah, Perek Vav, Halacha Tes, the Tur in Orach Chaim Tav Samach, I brought it in source number 17, quotes Rav Kohen Tzedek saying, Latzeis Yidei Chavasa B'Lel Rishon Eino Ela B'Matzah She'afa Yisrael L'Shei Matzah. You only fulfill your obligation on the first night if you use matzah that was baked by a Jew for the sake of matzah, quoting the Pasuk. Ushmar temes hamatzos, guard the matzah, ashe shimur l'shem matzah, has to be guarded as matzah. That's the idea. This is not only because we are afraid that the dough might become chametz, but because a critical component of the process of making matzah, a crucial third ingredient alongside wheat and water, is the presence of a Jew who is striving to fulfill the mitzvah of his creator, her creator as well. So today, we are supposed to continue the tradition of Jews who were ma'amin, who believed, despite the most difficult conditions, they remained loyal to Hashem. They suffered and they remained loyal. Those are the Jews who are there in the Haggadah. The message for us, out of all of this, for the last 7 months, we've been living our own type of Mitzrayim Kaviyachol. It's not the same, no. But on our level. On Haggadah night, I called it a gnus. It's a state of degradation. The hostages being stuck. The war which seems to never end and to be filled with setbacks. The fear of Hezbollah. The displaced families, south and north. The degradation in the eyes of the world. The anti-Semitic attacks. But we've remained strong. We've traveled to Israel. We've been in touch with our families there. We've sent financial and material support to Chayalim, to their families, to their communities. We've lobbied. And most relevant, we've been davening. Vanitzak, we cried out to Hashem with our Tehillim, with the special Misha Berachs, with the lists of names, with Avinu Malkeinu, with Av HaRachamim, with private davening. You know, at Haggadah night, I talked about two approaches to marking the war at our Seder. Approach number one, acknowledging the gnus and davening for it to be different. The empty chair, the nameplate, the picture of the hostages, the tfilos, the prayers of Rav Lau and Rav Rimon before Vehisha Amda, the piece that I brought from Rav Kook at Yachatz about recognizing that which is broken within us, within our community, within our nation. And the second approach, envisioning the Shevach, envisioning the glory, being truly Mitzapel Yeshua, seeing that success in our mind's eye when the IDF comes home, when the hostages are freed, and using that to fuel our Hallel. Well, here is one more approach. That place between Genus and Shevach, the place of the Jews who are in the Haggadah, who remained loyal and cried out to Hashem, who are represented at Matzah. I would love to say to do the following at Vanitzak, but I worry about disrupting Magid. So instead at Vehisha Amda, along with those tfilos of Rav Lau and Rav Rimon, pause for a moment to remember what it has been like to daven all this time. When we said those first frightened Tehillim on Shmini Atzeres and Simchas Torah, not knowing what was going on, when I used to stand here reciting the lists of the Chayalim connected to our community, when we read the names on the cards that we distributed, when we held the hostage books, when we stood here at this time last week and said Avinu Malkeinu during the Iranian attack, davening for a miracle that actually came, put ourselves in that headspace and silently say one more perek of Tehillim, as a Jew who has remained loyal, as a Jew whose voice Hashem hears, Vayishma Kolenu. To summarize what we've said, we asked, why is Moshe excluded from the Haggadah, Ani v'lo HaShaliach? We noted that the Jews do receive mention. They are credited with causing Hashem to respond with the Amunah they display as they suffer, and their tefillah with that Amunah. Moshe is excluded because he doesn't suffer. The Haggadah is about the story of Jews who suffered and remained loyal and how Hashem responded to them. This is expressed with the matzah of the Seder in two ways. The emphasis on having us make the matzah ourselves, like those aniyim, like those paupers in Egypt. And the emphasis on our kavanah for the mitzvah as part of the shmirah process. The message for us, Hashem does hear our loyalty in our tefillah. Hashem values it. Vanitzak el Hashem, we cried out to Hashem, Vayishma kolenu, and he heard our voice. And now we return to the medrash with which we began, about Moshe talking to the Malach HaMavis. Did you notice how Moshe began? Moshe had all these credits on his record. He split the sea, he brought Torah to the world, he fought for Hashem, and when necessary, he battled Hashem to save the lives of the Jews. But what was the first thing Moshe said? Ani ben Amram. I am the son of Amram. Moshe mentions, first of all, that he is the son of Amram, because you can't have a Moshe without having an Amram first. We said before, Moshe had divine support every step of the way. He led the Jews with Hashem's voice inspiring him, pushing him, leading him. Moshe had a miracle-wreaking staff. He had Miriam and he had Aaron. When Moshe was in trouble, Hashem was by his side. Even during the intermediate 37 years in the desert, when Hashem did not address Moshe directly, there were daily miracles, the man, the traveling well, the traveling clouds, the fire. What did Amram have in his day? He had no miracles. He had no divine voice. He had no splitting of the sea. But Amram is the one who never sinned, says the Gemara in Shabbos, source number 18. Arba mesu be'ityo shel nachash. There were four people who died because of the snake's venom ve'eluhen, and here are the four. Binyamin ben Yaakov, Amram avi Moshe, Yishai avi David, Kilav ben David. Look at that. Amram is on the list. He never sinned. And he led a nation of slaves. He tried to guide them towards Hashem without the sound and light show that Hashem would give to his son. Amram created an Amram, a great nation. You know, in Parshas Va'era, we get this whole list of the members of Reuven and the members of Shimon and the members of Levi until we get to Moshe and Aaron and we stop there. And everybody asks, what was that about? Why did we list all of them? We're listing those Jews who were the rank and file. We're listing those Jews who followed Amram with his blood and his sweat. Amram was, we are taught, the Gadol Hador. I didn't bring on the sheet, the Medrash, to support that. I'll have to do that. But Amram is the Gadol Hador. He is the leader of the previous generation. You know, we sometimes find the title Ben Amram, son of Amram, used to degrade Moshe. He isn't worthy of his own name. The Gemara in Sanhedrin describes the Zimri, the head of the tribe of Shimon, when he's involved with a Midianite woman. And Zimri says to Moshe, Ben Amram, Zu Asura Umuteres. He says, son of Amram, is this woman permitted or prohibited? Vim Tomar Asura, and if you're going to tell me she's prohibited, Bas Yisro Mihitiraloch, you married a Midianite. Why were you allowed to marry the daughter of Yisro? He insults Moshe, Ben Amram, you son of Amram. The Medrash that Rashi quotes, when Kalev tries to silence the people when they're upset, when they listen to the words of the Meraglim of the spies, Vayahas Kalev Esa'am El Moshe. Kalev turns the nation against Moshe, says the Medrash. Tzavach va'omar, he cried out and he said, V'chizu bilvad asalanu ben Amram, is this the only thing that the son of Amram did to us? And Hashomeh ha'savur shabalasaper b'gnuso. And the people thought he was going to insult Moshe, and they were silent, and then he turned it around. Rabbi Leo Mizrahi, commenting on that Rashi, says, yeah, using the term Ben Amram comes across as an insult. But Moshe sees Ben Amram not as an insult, but a badge of pride. This is where I come from. I come from those Jews who were in Egypt. I come from those Jews who were from the tribes of Reuben and Shimon and Levi, who were listed, whose lineage was listed in Parshas Va'era. I come from these people. My father is Amram. Like the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Kuf Yud Amud Aleph, in which Ben Amram is a mark of praise. When the sun and the moon are angry that Hashem is not defending Moshe to Korach, and they say, Ribono shel Olam, imata oseh din leben Amram neitze, if you will perform justice for the son of Amram, then we will do our jobs, vimlav lo neitze, and if not, we're not interested in shining anymore. Like the Gemara in Shabbos, Peites Amud Aleph, the last source on your sheet, source number 22, where the Satan comes looking for the Torah when Hashem has given the Torah to us and says to God, where is the Torah? And Hashem says, Lech etzel ben Amram, go to Ben Amram. Ben Amram there is not an insult. Ben Amram is a sign of pride. We are B'nai Amram. We are living through an ordeal. We don't have the clear miracles, although last Matzai Shabbos was really remarkable. But we are the Jews of the Haggadah. The Jews who experienced, the Jews who suffered, and who cried out to Hashem, and in whose merit Hashem sent Moshe and empowered him to take us out. May we continue to walk that path of Amram all the way to a Geula Shelema.